Accession number 20065, Reel 4.
Janusz Kozieniewski, Reel 4. The boys were quarrelling.
Yes. The boys were quarrelling and even fighting. When they fought, we let them fight, but only for a while. But after a while, there was an older boy than us. Well, he was a kind of a senior, because the German always wanted to have a senior man in the room which is responsible for something. So this boy said, "Let us stop it." No, so we let them fight for about 5 minutes probably, and then we stopped them. But it is strange phenomenon among young people like that as well. Sometimes, where RGO were given by RGO some vegetables.
RGO
was a Polish organization. I don't know what the letter stands. It is RGO. What they stands for, but was organization which looked after prisoners and was recognized by Germans, and Germans led them to do something like Red Cross, something of that kind. And this RGO used to send to us to prison vegetables. And the vegetables were in the form that they, for instance, would open the door and throw through the door in the dirty bag, still covered with soil, probably 5 or 6 kilos of carrots. So once, when they gave us these carrots, I received only one parcel during these 6 weeks in Warsaw from my house. It was possible to receive a parcel. My mother sent me a parcel, also to RGO. They gave him something to this RGO, and RGO delivered it to me. And in this parcel was sugar, some sugar. And there was another boy there. He said, "Oh, we got these carrots, we got the sugar. So we are going to make kind of a shredded carrots, and we put your sugar, and we will have a kind of a nice something to eat. It's quite tasty," he says. So they managed to get somewhere cover from the shoe polish. They perforated this. This boy was quite enterprising. And when I was asking what they are for, I asked him once what are for. "Oh," he says, "they're going to shoot me because they caught me with the arms. I had a revolver." And he was quite careless about it. He was funny. I sometimes thought that he was joking, but I'm not very sure whether he was or he was right. And this box was perforated, so we shredded these carrots on this box, and we said, "Well, we must leave it because it must to mature for about an hour or two, you know. He must leave it outside, you know." So when these carrots were maturing, you know, to say so, you know, I don't know what kind of it was. So I agreed what he was doing. So there was his roll call for picking people for execution, taking the hostages. So of course there's a general tension there. Well, in some cases the Germans didn't inform you. There was a roll call for execution for something else, but usually it was execution. But immediately they ran through the corridors, alles raus, that means everybody out, and going out, and then you have to arrange yourself in this kind of a formation they wanted, and you never knew what they really want. And then when this roll call was over, they came back again, like in my room. I suppose I was one of them. And immediately we started chattering, if nothing's happened. we started eating this carrot and so on. So in a way, when I'm looking at it, I thought that probably very young people, which I was one of them at the time, behave themselves like these buffaloes which are crossing the river in Africa. On television you can see it. They are being caught by the crocodile, but he just managed to escape from it. And they, when they cross on the other side of the bank, they eat grass straight away. So to some extent, we did with these carrots. You know, we just moment ago we didn't know they are going to be shot or not, and we're coming back to these things, and we are eating carrots and joking again if nothing happened. But I suppose, why I try sometimes to explain it, that it was a reason why we survived, because if we were taking it so seriously, and you know, we probably would break down completely, because you can't live worrying continuously. You have to be normal. And you see, now coming to the next, after once, every day they were taking people for interrogation. And once they took one boy, his name was Kukulski. And he was kind of a slim, tall boy, and they managed to get playing cards from somewhere, and they're playing cards. I wasn't, but they were. And there was knock at the door opened. Well, immediately we put summer cards away because we were not allowed to have cards. But usually these things like cards they were getting from the prisoners who were just coming, you know. They didn't, the prisoners used to go for interrogation to Aleya Shuha and coming back again, and they were getting these from other prisoners. So quite often they had a cigarette or cards or something which we didn't have in the cell. So this boy had these cards. But whenever assessments, they were making searches in the prison cell. So whenever they come, they were hiding all these things. But for instance, they were prying through the window on the outside, putting on the seal. And if they find it, they would say, oh, it's not mine, we don't know whose it is. Probably some other prison put it, you know. So there were little things like that. They were in order to have a game of cards, they were risking, probably beating or even probably killing. Probably, I don't know, but just for the sake of having a game, you know, they were doing these things. So they were playing cards. And then they called Kukulski out. So they put the card very quickly away, and this Kukulski went out. Or afterwards, for about hour or 2 hours afterwards, this Kukulski is coming back again, and he is walking around the room like under the delirium. Some boys are asking, what happened? What is wrong, Kukulski? What happened? And he doesn't say anything. You know, he just walks around. He goes kind of aimlessly. He picks one thing from another, and they try. And then he says, I'm going. He says, so they're trying to pass him his belongings because he has some kind of a jumper, probably a jacket, and so on. No, I don't need it. And the door is open, and the assessment is standing there, but he was not looking out inside. He was just standing and something looking along the corridor. So assessment or a guard. And then he said, in a slang, I'm going to Chape. Chapa is a hut, but I'm going on hut. That means I'm going to be shot, hutted, if you like to this way. You know, if you like to translate it into English, probably would be the nearest word, hutted. But in prison language, it means shot in the head. So I'm going to be shot, he says. And then the assessment stood for about 10 minutes, and he was just trying to stay in this cell as long as possible. And in the end, the German wasn't hiring also, probably, and he felt probably sorry for him, I don't know really. Since then, he said, hurry up, Kukulski, already 15 minutes have passed. And they took him out, and they shot him. They said that they shot him, because you could hear shooting quite often, but I don't know if they shot him, but you know, but he must have told him that we are going to shoot you, for whatever he did. But we never seen him again. And Another thing with this, in this room, once, I'm going step by step, once for example, speaking to you, why I'm stopping, because why I'm speaking to you, sometimes I speak with my mouth only, but sometimes it comes kind of a vivid picture, and more or less I forget that I am here, that I start thinking that I'm there again, you know what I mean? For a kind of a short moment. And then once there was a kind of unusual commotion outside the camp. At the time they moved me to another cell. There was a street here, prison, street in front of us. And on the other side of the street was smashed ghetto. It's still smoldering because it was ghettoized. It was in the spring. I've forgotten exactly when it was spring. But we were arrested in August. So there was, you could still smell this kind of a burning stench in ghetto. And there were a lot of one boy jump on the shoulders another one and look through this window there on the top, because the window was higher than the height of the man. And he looked and there, oh, he said, Jewish people are crowded against the wall. They're standing on the other side of our prison against the wall. There was a wall around the prison. There was another, not wall, but houses, smashed houses, you know, kind of a skeleton of houses. And there was a pavement, and the Jews were standing there. I suppose they were just picking these Jews from the ghetto, which they picked from the ghetto remnants. I don't know really where they got from. I don't even know they were Jews, really. But everybody was saying that they were Jews. But they were standing, the guards were standing there. You know, every probably 20 or 50 meters was a German soldier with a rifle or a SS, you know, German standing there and guarding them. And then Heller said, oh, so because there were only two of these windows, you know, with the barred windows through which you could have a look. There were no glass there. There was opening really, so there was always fresh air inside the prison. So I wanted to have a look again, you know, there was nothing there. So everybody had it. But in order to have a look, you have to stand on somebody else's shoulder, have a look very quick. And when I had a look at there, all these people standing there, they must have been Jews, you know, because they never let them inside the prison. Probably they drew them straight and picked them up from the ghetto and probably took them to concentration somewhere. I don't know what they did with them. And this SS man was standing there, whoever he was. He noticed that the people must be looking through the windows, probably not our windows, but other from other cells as well. And he saw them, whoosh, opened his machine gun and went on the wall, you know. So, well, I jumped off the shoulder, off his shoulder, and I never looked again. Nobody ever looked after. And afterwards, SS was coming and were walking from the cell to cell and shouting who was looking through the window, come forward. But, of course, nobody would say that they came because we never knew, because they knew what would happen if they told them. And you could hear shooting, beating, screaming every day, you know. Okay. Once you were in the room, there were a crowd of us. They were not really starving us, but we're hungry, but we're not kind of like it was in the concentration camp. We didn't work, but this tension and this shooting, this execution, all these things, and this unexpected and unknown future, what's going to happen next moment, it was, well, I don't know how to put it really, but it was very nerve, kind of a racking, you know, breaking really. And then, you see, they, from for interrogation, from prison, which was called Paviak, the prisoners were taken to called Aleya Shuha. This is the name of the street, which is still called the same name in Poland. It was not destroyed. It was headquarters of Gestapo, headquarters of interrogation. For interrogation, they were taking people up to this to this Gestapo, to this headquarters, to this Aleja Shucha. As a matter of fact, I went to see this Aleja Shucha probably 2 years ago, and I saw the cell in which I think I was there. And in this Aleja Shucha, they were interrogating people, and they took my father twice, three times probably, and they took me twice, because once I went there, and they took me in the morning, 10 o'clock, on the lorry outside. It is on the other side of Warsaw, quite a long, well, not the long, because Warsaw is not a big town, but probably 2 or 3 kilometers from prison to Aleja Shucha. And in Aleja Shucha, they took it downstairs, and there were rooms there where they kept us. They called it tramways. Because they had the sliding doors, like the tramways have. And you went just behind the tramway, well, not doors, sliding bars, really. Around the tramway, there were a row of chairs. You were sitting there with a face towards the wall, which was quite, of course, splattered with blood, and then waiting for your turn to be interrogated, and behind, the SS guards was walking there, you know, the German guards were walking there. So when I was sitting the first day, first time I went there, I was sitting all day, and they sent me back to Paliak without interrogation, because probably they didn't have any time to interrogate everyone. So they sent me. So after a couple of weeks, they sent me back again and for interrogation. And from this cell, I had to go upstairs, and there was a big office there, and in the office was a desk, and by the desk was interrogator, Gestapo sitting there, and another one was just walking around. And they asked me to sit down opposite him, by his desk, and they asked me to confirm my name and this kind of a thing, and the next thing they asked me, who was your father? Where's your father? And I said, well, my father is in prison in here. I mean, what is his name? I'm an official. His name is Grabinski. And I said, why is he Grabinski? I said, well, why he calls himself Grabinski? I said, well, he was honest. I think that was quite, had a good presence of mind, really. I was a bit frightened, but I was quite frightened, really. But I was even pretending to be more frightened, because I thought that when you are frightened, it's kind of like an instinct of self-preservation. You think that probably people are going to be more lenient for you or this kind of, and I think it back. I didn't think at the time, but you know, but I think that it is like the animals pretend to be dead in order to escape. So I think that you are frightened. It's kind of a similar phenomenon to some extent. And he asked me, why he called Grabinski? I said, well, because he was officer in the army. My father already told me, you know, they were silly, because my father already in prison, he informed me all these things. He just, on this little bit of paper, he told me this thing. It was a risk of doing, but that nevertheless was worth taking it. Because, but the rest, he said to me, very simple, tell everything true, you know, whatever. But organization, of course not. He never mentioned organization, but organization is obvious for me. I'm going to talk about organizations. And apart from that, I didn't know anything about organization, my father, because the underground was organized in such a way that the people, if possible, they know nothing about the other people if it was not necessary. So therefore, my father never taught me anything what he was doing. And whenever any visitors were coming to my father, I was told with my brother and with my mother to go out of the house completely. And they would come, we were told to go to clear the house for 3 hours because I'm going to have this and this and this. So I didn't know what was really father doing. I didn't know what his friends were who... Well, I had a bicycle, I had a bit of paper to carry away, but my father gave me. But who gave my father and what my father did, I didn't have a clue. And I suppose German knew this thing. So they So they asked, so I told them what, Grabinski, I told them, well, because you were an officer, and if you caught him, you were putting prisoners of war into the camp. And my father, he didn't want to be prisoner of war. He preferred to stay with the family, he says. I said, did he belong to any organization? I said, I don't really know, because I was only a year in Poland. I lived in Lithuania, and I don't have any friends in here. I don't know anybody, and I don't even live. I lived on the farm. So again, you know, they accepted my excuse, you see. Then they asked me, have you been yourself in an organization? I said, no, I've never been in an organization. No, it's the same thing, you see. So they said, they asked me, they really keep repeating the same question several times. And to frighten me more, another SS man took a big whip from the wall and started walking and just hitting his boots with his whip, you know, kind of a way that now is, I'm going to whip you as well. But he didn't, in fact. And then he asked me about me, belong to organization. I said, no, I'd never belong, you know, because I don't know anybody. I haven't got any friends, nothing. I came from Lithuania. I was working on the farm. So he said, took the revolver out of his drawer and said, what is it? I said, silly question, really. Nobody asked me. I said, revolver. I said, do you know what is the mark of this revolver? No, I don't. I don't, I said, you know. So he asked me again several times. He didn't interrogate me for a long time. In the end, they said, okay, go back. So I was really lucky because they never hit me. They never did anything to me. I went back to prison. And then one day, again, the rumors spread. They are preparing a big transport to Auschwitz. Because we never notified about anything. It was always rumors, you know. Whatever we knew, it was perhaps, but not 100%. The rumor taking us to Auschwitz. So in fact, it happened, you know, this particular day in the morning, everybody is out to the bottom of these things, and there, the assessment, there was our crowd, probably 1,000 or 1,500 people, because from time to time they were emptying this prisoner for the new prisoners, you know, to come. And then there were making out of us groups, with kind of a German kind of a systematic bureaucracy, really. They were making questions because they're small groups where the German was reading on the list the name of the prisoners, say 40 or 20, I've forgotten how many in there. And this group was separated, and the next group was formed, and then you had stand separately there. And then each group would walk outside, which also we didn't know at the time where, but afterwards I found that outside to the lorry. And the lorry lot would go to the station, and the station, the wagon, and so on. And I was so pleased that at least all this isolation stopped, and we're all in the crowd. I can mix with the people here, there, and I can stay with my father all the time and talk with my father, and nobody really forbids me, you know, and it's no risk at all. So I was very, very pleased, but at the same time I was frightened all the time that something will happen and I will be separated again, even in this transport. So more or less I hold my father by his hand all the time to make sure that I won't lose him. And then when they are reading these names into the group, my father found himself in a different group than I. They put him in one group, and they are reading, and then it's the end, and I am putting him in another group. So, I wouldn't say the plucked of my courage, because it wasn't probably courage, it was kind of a, but didn't think about the dangers, you know. Probably was no dangers, I'm not very sure. But I was more or less a kind of a force independent of me, pushed me forward to this German and asked him. So I went forward, you know, I wouldn't dare to come near German, but you know, this desire to be with my father was really stronger than anything at the time, you know, at this moment. Then I didn't even think about it, you know. I just went to this German and stood in front of him the one who was reading, and I was stood, and by side of him was standing Polish interpreter, and I stood by side of him, and this Polish interpreter, and the German didn't see me, you know, because he was looking, and this listener was looking somewhere else, and this Polish interpreter says to me, "Get away, boy, quickly, because he will kill you." And I ignored him, and I was still standing, and probably a couple of minutes, he turned around, and then he looked at me, and he asked this man what he wants, this interpreter. And then he pretended, and he didn't speak to me anything, but yes, you know, he says, he turns around to Fischer, and he said, "What do you want?" I said, "I would like to be with my father, who is in this group." And then, I didn't know this German is going to put me there, ignore me, or hit me, or kick me, I didn't know. But surprisingly, German said, "All right then." He took on one list, put this list, changed the list, claimed the nation, put me with my father. And this Polish man was really more frightened than I was, because he told him, "Get away, because he will kill you." So there was a kind of a humane reflex, in a way, in this condition, in this crowd. You know, a small thing, probably didn't cost him anything to do these things, to put my name, to change the name. And probably he was forming himself these groups. So then we found ourselves in the train, and we traveled to Auschwitz. And the train were put in the cattle wagons. The wagon was full. I don't know how many people were there. And there were nothings. There were old wagons. There were kind of a chinks in the wall. We could see a bit of light outside. There was not even windows were blocked and so on. But it was possible to, in turn, you could look probably, there was a little big hole in there, probably could break piece of a plank and so on. And we were passing through the town, our town, where we were arrested, because the railway line to Auschwitz was going through our town. We drove a little cart, and we drove this cart through this hole and fare on the railway track sometimes, with address to my mother, informing her that we are going to Auschwitz, because at the time we knew already that we are almost certain going to Auschwitz. And surprisingly, the cart was delivered to my mother. But, you see, coming back to my father again, well, I'm saying this thing because you know, it was happening quickly, but afterwards, when we came to Auschwitz, the train came to Auschwitz itself, but in Auschwitz we were unloaded, and all of us were marched to Birkenau at the time, because Birkenau was, at my time, there was not railway to Birkenau. They made it after me when they're taking all these Jewish people to the concentration camp. As it is now, there is a rail track, but at my time there was not there were crematorias there, but probably not all of them. So we're there. In Auschwitz, we were there for, in Birkenau, we were there for, again, sometime, forgotten how many, probably 5-6 weeks again, till about Christmas time. And one day, there was a roll call again.
What were conditions like in Birkenau?
Not very nice. In Birkenau, first of all, there was very little to eat, so I was all the time hungry. There was already winter, and the clothing, well, there was this striped clothing and no linen, and then, you see, there was... I was a row of barracks, probably 500-600 meters long, and I was in the middle of it. So if I want to go to the toilet, I had to go about 300 meters, you know, in the night, probably 200 meters. And when the lights were out, sometimes there was a raid from the Russian, or probably the other raid.